Welcome to Bodcast, the Business of Dentistry podcast, brought to you by Practice Plan. Bodcast delivers the best business advice, real-life stories, and practical hints and tips to make your practice a more profitable and sustainable business. And now, here's your host.
Hello, my name's Nigel Jones, and I'm Sales and Marketing Director at Practice Plan, and welcome to today's edition of Bodcast, where we're going to be giving a bit of an employment law update in the company of Sarah Buxton from FTA Law. Sarah, welcome. Would you mind just introducing yourself?
Yep. Hi, Nigel. I'm Sarah Buxton, and I'm a HR and employment solicitor and a director of FTA Law. So I specialise in providing employment and HR advice to dental practice owners and managers.
Great. Well, thank you very much for joining us today. And one of the things that I've been aware of throughout my career is actually just how much employment law changes in small ways, in big ways, but it's constantly shifting. So would you mind just running through maybe some of the recent changes?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're right what you say there. I always say no disrespect to my colleagues in property, but property last changed in 1954 and employment law changed last week. So it is my full-time job to keep up to date with the employment legislation. And there are many changes that have happened recently. About 8 weeks ago, they abolished the employment tribunal fees. So what that means is that an employee does not have to pay to make a claim to the employment tribunal. So employers are going to find that there will be an increase in the amount of claims that they receive. And having to deal with those claims is costly, incredibly stressful, and very time consuming for all involved. So that's been the big change that's happened. But over and above that, the case law, so cases that go through the court system, they constantly change the law. So if we take Christmas parties, probably 20 years ago, nobody thought that anything that happened at a Christmas party an employer could be responsible for. But Christmas parties are still in the course of employment. So what that means is that anything that happens at the Christmas party, the employer can be responsible. And if I give an example of a case in London where a lawyer went to her Christmas party and the partner of the law firm made some comments about what she was wearing. I think the partner was drunk and had a bit to drink, and she wasn't very happy about what was said to her. And she resigned from her post and made a claim to the Employment Tribunal for sex discrimination and harassment. And her case settled out of court for £1 million. So it's high compensation that's awarded in discrimination claims. And I think because there's a lot of alcohol at Christmas parties, people do say things that maybe they wouldn't say when they're in the workplace because they're feeling more relaxed. But the practice owner, the employer, is still responsible for what happens. So that's changed and developed over the years. And what actually is in the course of employment has extended. And so you probably think that by the time the Christmas party's finished, that's it, your responsibility has come to an end. But actually, a couple of years ago, there was a case where two colleagues got in the back of a taxi together and the male colleague made some advances towards the female colleague and she wasn't very happy and she resigned. And again, she won her case for sex discrimination against her employer because the judge ruled that what happened in the back of that taxi was still in the course of employment. So the cases that are going through the court system are constantly changing. Christmas parties, and I know now some dental practices like to have social summer barbecues as well, and that would be still classed in the course of employment.
I don't think that's something that would have occurred to many people at all, that it could be to that extent. And I understand. Absolutely. The example with the lawyer is there's a salary thing that's going on there, what she's lost in earnings, because so hence the £1 million.
Yeah.
But even so, the fact that that principle that you could be liable for comments made then, or the back of the taxi thing, I think that's something that people are probably largely unaware of.
The main issue is because with discrimination claims, the amount of compensation that can be awarded is unlimited. So it depends what the judge feels on the day is just and equitable. So it's hard to be able to give a figure because we can't work that out in advance. There's no formula. So the worse the discrimination, the more they'll be awarded. So it's definitely something that's developed over the years. I mean, the first discrimination legislation only came in the 70s. And it changed in 2010, and they introduced more protected characteristics. And protected characteristics are features of employees that are protected. So the most recent one has been gender reassignment. That's been introduced, that anybody that's going through that process, they're protected in the workplace. And currently they're looking at introducing discrimination for caste system. So in some cultures, they actually have caste systems, and in the workplace, it can be that one caste will treat somebody differently because they're in a different caste, and they're looking at introducing that. It hasn't come in yet, but there's lots of consultation over whether that will become a protected characteristic.
Well, that's really interesting. So it'll be fascinating to see when that will be finalised. Have you any idea on timescales on that one?
No, it's constantly changing. And I think at the moment, the government's pretty busy with Brexit. So they haven't really put much attention into employment laws at the moment. And again, it changes with depending who gets into power, who's in government at the time. But we're constantly keeping an eye out for the changes that are happening.
Well, I suppose that was going to be one of my next questions, actually, was how does a practice owner, who's generally speaking working flat out, how do they stay on top of all of this?
With great difficulty. It's my full-time job to keep on top of this, and therefore I wouldn't expect a practice owner to be able to keep on top of the changes and the amendments that they need to make. There's lots of material out there, so we write in Business of Dentistry magazine, we provide employment updates, so there's lots of help, but I don't think any practice manager or any practice owner is going to be able to keep on top, so they really do need extra HR support in that regard.
And what's the form would that take? Is that sort of like a steady drip feed of information going through?
What I tend to do is if there's been a change, I would let clients know. And sometimes it's just a case of the policy needs updating and changing, so here's a new policy, and try and take that stress away from the practice owner so that they're not the ones having to update their policies. And I think that works quite well, especially for a busy dental practice owner.
Okay. What other changes can you see coming up on the horizon?
Talking about Christmas parties, there is the, again, a consultation at the moment where they're looking at providing more protection for women who are on maternity leave or have come back to work and are still breastfeeding. So they have said that going forward, employers will have to provide a quiet room at the Christmas party for a breastfeeding mother to go and feed their child. And it's not allowed to be the toilet. It's got to be a comfortable room to enable them to feel comfortable to leave and go and feed their child. So there's lots about breastfeeding and what adjustments the employer has to make. So for example, in the workplace, they may have to provide a separate fridge for a woman to express milk and to keep the milk in that fridge. That's also been said, which again, for small businesses, that is going to be quite a big cost to them. And especially in the dental industry where it is quite female dominated, it is something that they're definitely going to have to take on board and start making adjustments for.
So does that mean that, because I guess an awful lot of Christmas parties for small practice teams will happen in a restaurant or in a, as opposed to a function room.
Mm-hmm.
So my guess is that the restaurants should be catering for that kind of thing as well.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's the obligation is not on the restaurant, it's not on the place, it's actually on the employer to find a venue where that is available. So hopefully some, quite a lot of restaurants do provide quiet rooms and would have a place, but the obligation is on the employer to find and ensure that that is available.
Yeah, fascinating though, because for some of the restaurants then that's presumably going to mean that they're going to lose a chunk of business.
Absolutely.
This talk about Christmas parties that we've had during the course of this podcast, it makes it feel really quite complex, and one wonders where it gets to the point where the risks and the complexity and the additional costs are outweighed or not by the rewards of doing Christmas party. How do you think people will?
I know. I always say that Christmas parties or summer barbecue and social events are great for morale, and I think all teams should still have these events, because actually the feel that employees get by being awarded definitely outweighs the risk. What the practice owner needs to do is make sure that they have a Christmas party policy, which sets out how they expect their staff to behave. So for example, you would want to say, in accordance with the equality and diversity policy, you would want a time when the Christmas party came to an end, so that if people decided to carry on partying afterwards, you weren't responsible. You may also consider what happens with social media in those circumstances, because you may not want pictures put on Twitter or Facebook of your drunken team having a good night out, because obviously that does affect the reputation of the dental practice. So you may want to control social media. And within that policy, you need to make sure that people have got transport to get home. That's really important, that you've arranged either taxis or you know that people are getting picked up, because you're responsible for their safety to get home.
And that's to get all the way home. You couldn't organise a bus that took them to or drop them in a central point.
That would be okay at that point, but you need to say that at that point the Christmas party has come to an end and your responsibility has come to an end. And so it's really important to have a policy, a written policy in place. I can't stress that enough. I get really busy in around October, November time drafting these policies for dental practices to make sure that if anything does happen at the Christmas party, at least the practice owner can say, it wasn't my responsibility because I told them how I expected them to behave. And therefore they can say that if a claim is made against them, that it wasn't their responsibility. It's really important.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Sarah. That's been eye-opening and absolutely fascinating and extremely useful. So thank you very much indeed for your time.